It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Please, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Right here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, today we got a little special treat for y'all. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be inviting Wayne Terhune on from Nevada. Now, let me tell you what the story is there. In the 2008 presidential election cycle, you might have heard of this one guy named Ron Paul. Now, what was going on was, behind the scenes, it was ugly. And the main thing, they did not want a single delegate that was selected to go to the Republican National Convention. Not a single delegate. In just Nevada, they were worried they're going to have quite a few. And they were all organized there. They had it. They followed all the procedures and all the hurdles you had to go through. Because, and we'll get more detail from Wayne. But I mean, I knew a lot of people. We were up from Phoenix. We're going up there to help them because what they had to do is they had to get so many signatures. They had to get the people that would go to the little precinct meetings that would then qualify them to go to their district meetings or go to the county meetings that would go to the state convention that would be able to vote on the blah 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 blah. But that made all this very difficult for, you know, anybody outside of their anointed to be able to participate. Well, by the time they got to the statewide convention in Reno, it was obvious Ron Paul dominated. They were going to do some ass whooping. And they went, you know what? We ran out of time. Turn off the lights in the convention hall. We're done. I mean, literally, that's what they did. So they go, I don't think so. So then they go to the meetings, which we live videotaped. We had a live broadcast on the web. We had activists that were up there in Nevada that they would take and live broadcast them coming in meeting with the activists going, well, if you play ball, I mean, they actually said this, if you play ball and you just relax, well, then you could be head SOB in charge like me in the next land. Now, wouldn't you like that? You'd get to wear the shiny badge. You know, you could be a shiny badge wearer if you just play ball with the party. Don't you want to do that? And they're all like looking at each other. Man, they so don't understand what they're dealing with. It was amazing. Well, they cast a ballot, and it was immediately obvious that Ron Paul was going to win everything. So they went, oh, no, 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 no. They put them in envelopes, signed and sealed it and everything, and put it in the safe deposit box of the resort, of the casino, the hotel where they were at. And they put it in safe, and there they stood until last Friday. Last Friday, they finally got out. They're just, we gotta get this done because we're going into an election cycle again. It's 2010. We got Harry Reid, man. He's running. We got like independents and stuff and libertarians and everybody and Republicans. Ron Paul people starting to, you know, it's after Labor Day of the year before. That's when campaign season started. We got this dark, ominous cloud of all of these Ron Paul votes sitting over there just haunting us. We have to get rid of this issue. So finally, they counted them Friday. And what did we find out? Well, there was a lot building up to that and, you know, since then, what happened this last weekend? A lot of people, I don't know if we talked about it. I just talked to yesterday a gentleman named Jim Dunsing, which was, he's a front sight firearms instructor. Here's a guy that's got some skills, okay? He's also an attorney. He was also Nevada state chairman of the Libertarian Party. And just this last weekend, he also got 3 bullets in the back from a cop during a traffic stop. Oh, got your interest on that one, didn't we? And then it was on the front page of the Nevada Las Vegas Review-Journal, telling what really happened. And, of course, this cop, hey, respect my authority! Boom, 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 boom. I mean, it was just amazing. And we'll drag this one out forever. I mean, he's already fired. It's amazing he survived. And I remember he was one of the instructors. My wife and I went up for a handgun defense thing. You know, that bunch of libertarians got a deal, you know, going with the Nevada guys to go there, I don't know, a couple summers ago in the heat, man. And we go up there, and there was one of the things they said. If you're within an hour of a trauma center and you take a chest shot, you know, you usually have about 85% chance that you'll survive. Didn't say, you know, three chest shots, you know, but I'm going, holy crap. So he's in a bad way, but he was well enough to talk to me yesterday, and he'll probably be checked out end of this week. And I had him post a bond, you know, because what the whole deal was when they stopped him, he had a warrant out for not paying a HOV violation, HOV lane deal or something he was fighting and whatever. But the point was, is, I mean, you know, because they can, you know, these, you're not, you know, immediately, you know, whatever, yes, and boss, whatever, boom, shot. Because he was going to another officer. They were kind of having this little roundup. They're pulling everybody over in this one area of town. And he, you know, this guy was getting out of hand, and he started shot him with a taser point blank in the chest and all. So he's going to another cop. Hey, save me. This guy, boom, boom, boom. All right, too late. So we'll talk more about that. But he's running. The reason I bring him up, he's a Libertarian state chair, but he's probably going to run against Harry Reid as an independent for U.S. Senate with three bullet holes in his back. So you can see all of this ties together. There's some focus there getting on, you know, Nevada politics, and the Republican Party there wanted to get rid of this issue. We got these, they're just like Krypton, you know, Kryptonite sitting over there glowing green over in somebody's, you know, the safe deposit box of this resort. And you can see it as they're putting the key in, it's glowing and vibrating. We got to get rid of the Kryptonite, you know. So that's what we're going to talk about here. They're building up to that, what happened, the post, because again, even though it's Nevada, you know, it's not Arizona, you know, but same kind of stuff that goes on in your area. This is the same kind of stuff that happened nationwide, and you can expect it to continue to happen. We have to highlight this stuff. This is how the internal parties are controlling this entire voice of the people. But they put on good tea parties. Try and run against them inside their state and see what happens. It's all astroturf, man. You wait till you just, but the people are mad. There's no getting around that. There's no getting around that. You know, they're definitely, you know, voicing they got a problem. Well, here in Arizona, we got Morpheus in. It's Thomas Costanzo. He's our sales manager here at Freedom's Phoenix, and he's an activist. And this morning he went down to Maricopa County supervisors. Now, what they, I'll just, you know, do it real quick. This is what's going on. There is so much that is the cost of processing these photo radar tickets that the Maricopa County is going, look, man, you know, we may get some money on the back end, but up front, we have such administrative requirements for us just processing all this stuff, tens of thousands. We can't do anything else for anybody else. It's grinding the system to a halt. We need like a $20 surcharge per one to be able to hire more people just to process all this stuff. That didn't even mean that they pay them or anything. I mean, just to open the envelopes. You know, so they're going, okay, well, we need, and because your dollars aren't worth as much anymore. They don't go as far. These guys, you know, they can't wait till later. You know, the states are going broke. You know, we're $2 billion deficit here in Arizona. We're worse than California per capita. A lot of people don't know. In the nation of all 50 states, Arizona per person is worse off than anywhere else. Oh, and Homeland Security, going, Janet Napolitano is the one who did it to us. So she's going to have a little carrot out there, needs your stimulus. Well, guess what you're going to do? Whatever the heck we want. Well, one of the things is here at Maricopa County, Thomas went down there to protest them adding on this surcharge. They had a little something to say. You know, so what? Just go right to that. When you made your testimony, what was the first thing you told them?
I told them this is a bunch of thieves. And that what they basically what the, you know, the people saying, we don't need to have this $20 fee, and everybody was all up in arms about $25. I said, you know what? Let's make it $500. No, let's make it $1,000. Then that way everyone will know what you guys are truly doing. It's theft. You're a bunch of thieves, and that's all you know how to do. And this will expose you for what you really are, which is theft.
And what was their response? Next speaker.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the point was made. I got a lot of like, whoa, you know. I don't know, expecting anybody to ask for more fees, but, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, if you jack it up, because they use this process where it's just high enough where you can just barely stand the pain. If they make it too high, then all the frogs will jump out of the water. They have to raise the water temperature slowly, or else if they don't, then all the frogs will jump out, and then no one will listen to what they have to say.
Well, what was the arguments that they were using? I mean, you know, they're saying, yeah, we just, you know, it's too successful. I mean, what was their reasoning? I don't even get it.
Well, the true numbers is they said that they've processed, since September, they've processed 400,000 photo radar tickets just since that time. There's one of the courts has that regularly does 14,000 per month, and they foresee this to surpass all the other filings combined.
Wow. And you add the drug war to that, and they're not doing anything but ripping us off. And a system will implode that way. You watch. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, in the studio with Morpheus, Thomas Costanzo, a.k.a. And what we want to do is go back to this morning. This morning, you're going before the Board of Supervisors. Now, in Arizona, a lot of states probably the same. The county is like a political subdivision of the state. So they are the state. You know, they just kind of got their own level of administration, de la, you do what, you know, state says. So they're state, you know, regardless of what they think. So you have them, they're obligated to do whatever. The supervisor just supervise whatever the state thing is. So what we want to do is find out how they're going to rip us off even more. And this is how they do it. We need a surcharge. Now, we had Mark Victor in here, criminal defense attorney. He's saying it's up to, you know, you can do up to 6 months in jail on this, $150,000 fine, such and such this fee. And that. Oh, and by the way, up to 84% surcharge. I mean, it wasn't even a surcharge because they can't change the fine structure. You know, that's got, but the surcharge, they do 84%. You know, it started off at, you know, 1, 2, 10. Now up to 84% they can do in a surcharge. What's that for? It's you know, sir, we charge. I mean, you know, because we can. So this is what's going on now. Now they started. They wanted a $20. What'd they call it? A surcharge or something?
Yeah, it's a surcharge.
Microphone.
Photo Enforcement Fund. Approval of this item establishes a budget for the newly created Justice Court's Photo Enforcement Fund.
So they just created a new fund.
Yeah.
Because they can.
Well, yeah, basically, it was funny because Wilcox, she said, well, let's just...
Which is one of the supervisors.
Yeah, she's...
Mary Rose Wilcox, yeah. Matter of fact, somebody shot her in the butt because she was behind a taxpayer ripoff to build Diamondbacks baseball stadium. And one guy finally, this is like a decade ago during all this, and it just all of a sudden some guy goes in the Board of Supervisors, boom, shoots her in the butt. But she's okay. They got a brain surgeon. But the thing is that it was a big deal at the time, and nobody wanted to talk about why he shot her. The media was like, shh, quiet. And everybody knew. It was because, man, they were just all this kind of fascist stuff like is going on now. So now I bet she had metal detectors.
Yeah. And no weapons are allowed in, except if you got a shiny badge.
Okay. So then Mary Rose Wilcox, she comes out and says, God, it's amazing she's still there. So she came out and said what?
She said, well, let's just withhold the $20 from the state. And then they said, no, we can't do that because if we do, then we're breaking the law. So that was her proposal. I thought, yeah, that's a pretty decent idea. We'll just, you know, withhold your money because basically the county is doing the ripping off for the state and then they have to forward everything to the state. Now they get their money on the back end, but like you were saying earlier, they can't wait and wait for the money because now it's depreciated between the time that they take the money and then the state gives it back to them, whatever. And then they don't get to determine how much money they get back. Now they have to beg for it back from the state.
Yeah, gold's going up to 1,100, man. It peaked up at 1,097 or something like that. I mean, a lot. Okay, it's gone here, and here we go. You know, I keep telling you guys, I'm going, you know, there is no, we're going to look back and go, I remember back when silver used to be in the double digits. I remember back when gold used to be in four digits. I remember back in those days. You remember those days, Thomas, back, you know, last week? I mean, you know, this is, you think I'm kidding. You think I'm kidding, man? This is going to get stupid. How much silver you got? Well, the thing is that now they're looking at the same kind of thing. They need money now. They can't pay their bills. They're, you know, the people are, you know, they're squeezing that turnip dry. There's no more blood. So what are they going to do? So they added it on. They take your advice. They go, that's a good idea. Maybe we should make it 100.
No, I said 500. No, and I said, then I backed up and said, no, you need to make it 1,000. Let's make it 1,000 so everybody will know what the hell you're doing.
And what'd they say?
They just looked at me blank, like, they didn't comment on anything, anybody from the peanut gallery.
Because they were going to do what they were going to do. Did they take a vote or under advisement?
No, they took a vote, and I knew they were gonna do it. The one guy, well, first of all, one guy dismissed himself, Don Stapley. As soon as they started talking, says, I haven't consulted with my attorney. I am going to recuse myself. So,
recuse myself.
Yeah, so he just bailed out.
So why was he have stock in the company or something?
Probably. I mean, there must be some kind of linking or something.
Well, see, that was a big thing about, you know, the baseball stadium back in the day. These guys all had, you know, financial interest and all kinds of stuff to do with baseball. It was amazing. Now, in fact, they were elected to – they created a law that allowed for them to create a stadium district to milk the taxpayers. When they did that, it took like a couple of years. And they did it, you know, like the last-minute legislative session at 2 o'clock in the morning kind of thing. And they kind of set their dormant for a couple of years getting everything all ready because they needed to elect of the five supervisors at least three or more that were sympathetic to what the big boys wanted to do. Well, after they got those guys elected – then they started it. But what they didn't know, there was one guy named Tom Rawls that was a libertarian attorney at the time. He was registered Republican, but it's obvious. He and his wife, both big-time libertarians, kind of the Ron Paulian thing going on. Well, the whole time in there in the mid-90s, he's feeding us all this information. He's telling us what's going on. We're filing suits. We're doing town halls. We're making a big ruckus on this thing because it was a big, giant, hundreds of millions of dollars of a taxpayer ripoff. And we were just chronicling the whole thing. Well, it becomes obvious what they're doing. Well, that's when they go to the talk show host and say, you're creating a hostile environment with your hate speech, and you have guys come out and shooting supervisors in the butt. Man, you see, this is how this stuff starts. When people do that, it was your fault for bringing up the issue, because if they didn't know how they were getting ripped off, they wouldn't have shot her. You see my point?
I got you.
So the thing is, that's what's going on with this. You know, because it's $20 now, you know it's going to be, you know, 40, 50, 200, whatever. I mean, it's never going to stop. And that was one thing a good friend of mine, he and his wife, we were having dinner with him last week, Sandy. And she goes like this. She goes, I realized a few years ago, you know, it was over. And I go, yeah? Well, what happened? She goes, nothing. It just became obvious to me that it was never going to be enough. That there was no limit. There was no stop. It was never going to stop. They're going to keep doing more. There was enough was never enough. You know, once I realized that, we're going by land, putting up the shed on the Lone Prairie. So that's what they're doing. You know, and they're just want to, they don't need to beat these guys. You have to understand, you think that we're wanting to, you know, take them on in arms and defeat them. You just got to survive them. They're going to fall on their own. I remember that concept mid-90s. A good friend of mine, Manfred, he goes like this. He goes, look, you want to go fight them? What do you want to go fight them for? Screw them, man. They're going to go up in the mountains and wait them out. You know, they'll feed on themselves. It's going to crash. It's going to done. Yes, but they'll have a vacuum. They'll be replaced by a new world order, de la whatever. And I'll ignore them, too. You know, this whole thing is going to come crashing down. And our guests at the bottom of the hour start, you know, kind of give you that idea. You'll understand. You know, this is how this works. This is what I want you to understand. They never are satisfied. Did you get the impression they were going to be satisfied?
No. No. You know, and it was so funny because the one guy, let's see, his name was Brock. He said I cannot in good conscience do, you know, I don't like what I'm having to do here, but we can't have the government, the courts grind to a halt, because they had the administrator guy, the head administrator from one of the courts come in. He gave his presentation and they asked him, what will happen if we do not pass this fee? Because they're doing 400 since September, 400,000 of these photo radar tickets just in September. So multiply that by what, 20 bucks. So was that $4 million or $8 million? That's a lot of money. So if we do not take this additional $8 million, the courts will grind to a halt. They have to build bigger facilities to be able to process all these things. So he goes, well, I can't in good conscience do this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, since I don't have a conscience, I guess it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, it's like, oh, I have a conscience. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No, I don't. Yes, I do. Let's talk out of both sides of our mouth at the same time.
Well, you know, I just talked to DT's, one of the activists at Camera Fraud. They make a bunch of their signs here and so on. He was picking up a bunch of them they made a couple nights ago. And he goes, yeah, I talked to the press. He goes, yeah, you want a V for Vendetta night? So tonight at 8 o'clock, they're going somewhere down on Baseline, whatever.
Yeah, Baseline and Dobson.
Why there?
Because there's a mid-camera, it's not on the corner, it's in the middle of the road, like between stoplights. So it's easy to get parking and easy to to demonstrate where those cameras are, because it's in the middle between the intersection.
So they're going to make sure that we have a protest with V for Vendetta masks. You know, it's going to get all the attention of the media because you know they can't resist. Well, we'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence, and we'll find out a little bit more about the truth.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
Yeah, and a couple other laws here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day. And, Liberty News Radio Network from Phoenix, Arizona, in the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, as I promised, we got a special little segment here. I want to make sure that you guys understand, because you need to know what happened during the 2008 presidential election cycle. It was everywhere across the country, but no more was it chronicled. Was it paid attention to? Was it important? Was it get the greatest opposition from the forces of the interplanetary bad guys of was Nevada. Now, we have a gentleman, Wayne Terhune. Now, Wayne, is that how you say your last name for me, please?
It's Terhune. You got it, Ernie.
Ooh, right on. Wayne Terhune is, your name was always prominently figured in this entire effort, and I don't want to diminish it by being inaccurate. Now, Wayne, what I want you to do is I want you to go ahead and tell our audience your involvement in the revolution, the Republican Party in Nevada, and how you were a major part in making sure that Dr. Paul got represented correctly and the opposition you ran up against. Because the bottom line is this. The balloting for the delegates to go to the national convention, it was shut down. They knew Dr. Paul would do well. They didn't want a single delegate at that national convention. And damn it, Nevada was going to muck up their plans. So they shut it down, put those ballots in a safe deposit box at the casino resort where you guys were in Reno, right?
Correct.
And they shut it down and said, no, 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 no. Well, this albatross has been hanging around their neck forever. They're going into election cycle 2010. They got to do something with them. So finally they relented, counted them Friday, and as suspected, Ron Paul did well. But I want to go ahead and go back to the beginning and your experience in this. First, why were you a Ron Paul supporter? Where'd you come from? What is it you do? How are you related to this?
Okay, well, I have a dental practice here in Sparks, and I've always been somewhat conservative. But,
okay, Sparks is east of Reno, about, 30 miles or something?
Oh, no, it's all one town, kind of like, Phoenix and Tempe merge. It's kind of like Reno-Sparks.
Okay, so Reno-Sparks, well, east. I mean, here, 30 miles is the valley. I mean, 60 miles across. But anyway,
right.
So you have Reno-Sparks. So you're in the Reno area. You have
Reno
a dental
area,
practice.
Right.
All right,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Anyway, so when we moved down here from Seattle, we just registered nonpartisan. We just vote Libertarian or Republican or whoever we wanted to. And then we had heard about Ron Paul. We heard him on the radio and thought this guy is great. And then when he was running for president, we thought, man, that's an answer to prayers. So back in 2007, June or so, we started a meetup group here in Reno and started small. And then we went down and saw Dr. Paul in Vegas in July, and I couldn't believe it. I thought that was freedom, just hearing freedom. And I wondered if the founding fathers had kind of like felt that same thing. I thought this guy's got to be president. Kind of figured it might be our last shot to do this thing, at the ballot box. So we really got involved, and the meetup group grew, And we went back to the Ames, Iowa, to the straw poll and helped out there. My son and I went and just did everything we could. And I think
how old are you and your son?
Yeah, I'm 58. My son's 27.
Okay,
his
so
name
it's
is Robert.
I saw that a lot. I saw it was always the, you know, teen, 20-something-year-old people and being dragged by or dragging their parents. I mean, that was a common theme.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the four of us, my daughter and my wife also, we all were involved. And so anyway, we came back, and I've got this dental office here in Sparks, and we kind of became one of the impromptu Ron Paul campaign centers for North Nevada, and we pretty much worked with the campaign. And so then we came along, and Ron Paul came here a couple times in, like, say, November, December. And we came up to our caucuses on in January, and we had caucus training classes in the office trying to, you know, we're working with the campaign with Jeff Greenspan out of Arizona. And he's kind of like tutoring us because we didn't know all that much about politics. And so we got everybody. It was just the revolution, as you know, Ernie, just took off, and people were just ready to go. And so they would call the campaign and they direct people to us. So we must have registered just hundreds of people for Ron Paul, for the Republican Party, just to vote for Ron Paul. And we had lots of training courses on how to get yourself as a delegate through the caucus, which was January 19th.
Which was kind of, as I understood Nevada, it was a multi-level, you had to concentrate, pay attention process.
Absolutely, yeah. They brought in kind of the Iowa-type thing, so they had precinct meetings, and you had to get yourself elected. Each precinct got so many delegates to the county convention, depending on population. And so we had our guys all trained, ready to go, get there early to the high schools in the morning, and to get in and try to be the precinct captains and run the meeting. And so we did a lot of that, and we did. And I think we probably got the majority of the delegates, or close to it anyway, to our Washoe County here, which is where Reno is. But around the state, we got a lot of delegates that went from the precinct level to the county level. And also on that day, they kind of had a straw poll on January 19th. Ron Paul came in second, Hedda McCain, all the others. Romney came in first.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Right.
Now, the Romney thing was a force of, you had people that were actually really involved. You had the Ron Paul people that are going through every step and so on. They were organized. They got the training. They knew how this game was played. They wanted to play. You brought them into, they're always screaming, we want the youth in. We want, bring new blood. We want. And they got, and then they're going, oh, no. On the other side, there was someone else that was very organized using their contacts to do the same thing, and it was Romney through the Mormon Church.
Well, yeah, you know, I think so. We saw what they did in Ames, Iowa. There's a lot of bucks there with Romney, and they bust people in from all the little towns all over and to come into that Ames straw poll. And there was, you know, some questionable things about the Nevada Republican Party on the caucus day. They were passing out ballots to people that hadn't even come in and registered to vote yet, and then a lot of them left. And, you know, there might have been some hanky-panky there because Romney got so many votes, and they might have bust some people in there, not sure, but the Republican Party was passing out ballots before people even registered to vote while they were outside in line waiting. And then they could have left if they wanted. But that was kind of a cosmetic straw poll. Nonetheless, Ron Paul came in second, kind of kept his campaign going. And so then we advanced to the county level. And we were having people, you know, we had training sessions for that. Here's what you can do. We were working on rules changes and working with the county. And we had a real nice county chair here in Washoe County, Heidi Smith. And the Republican Party was trying to, you know, put the pressure on her, but she was fair to everybody. And so anyway, we went to our county meetings and showed up, did our work, and voted, and got a lot of delegates to the state convention, which was in April 26, 2008.
Well, that was going on around the state, out of Clark County and Nevada.
Correct.
You know, Nevada had it going on. Now, we had come up from Phoenix with a bunch of the activists helping.
We came up.
You know, we understood the importance of this, and we were close, so what the heck? We're going to Iowa and New Hampshire and everywhere else, so what's the difference?
Yeah.
So we had a bunch. We were doing DVDs, and we're filing, we're collecting signatures. doing whatever. We got the Army, the Revolution Phoenix is coming on into town. So we go to Vegas, and I've been up to Reno, too. There was some of the...
You were up to Reno, sign painting, as I recall.
Yeah, I know. We're doing all kinds of fun. And a lot of it's just fun. I mean, we're just having fun.
Well, yeah, you know, Ron Paul people have fun. I don't think the neocons do.
No, they're very scowling.
They are.
So we go through this process. We do what we can. So we were intimately involved in a lot of this. Now, Greenspan's from here in Phoenix and a friend of mine.
Right.
And he and Andre Campos, you know, they were the Southwest guys. So they're up there, and they love playing this internal politic and stuff, and I don't even want to hear about it. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. The campaign, I don't even want to know. I'm more interested in helping you guys express yourselves.
Right.
But the thing was, is they were really adamant about the mechanics of everything. They knew that you had to do this and jump through this hoop and do this thing and fill out this form, and they were training all you guys across the state on how to do this. They were successful. You finally wind up, you go to the state convention. I want to get to that because now you got your forces there. How many people were at the state convention?
I can't remember exactly, but I think from the whole state there was something like 1,345 delegates from around the state. And basically, you know, that comes down to Clark County, which has Vegas. They probably had the biggest and then amount of that. And then Washoe County, which has Reno, is kind of your next biggest. And then all the rurals, you know, they come in from all over the state. And there was about 1,345, and they were at the Peppermill Hotel Casino in Reno on April 26, 2008.
So what do you think, hardcore, you know, pretty much counted on there because of Ron Paul, of that 1,300 were how many?
You know, probably hardcore, strictly Ron Paul, I would say maybe 30 to 40%.
30 to 40%. And then Dr. Paul comes up and says, hello, and has something to say and talk and compare with these guys. What impact did that have? Well, we'll find out when we come back from Wayne Terhune that was there living it. And I tell you, he has a lot to tell us. You stay right there. We'll be right back so you know what's coming in the future.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You know, we're fighting for a little bit of let's try that freedom thing. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? Got a question? Yeah, freedom's the answer. More freedom's going to make it better. And I tell you one thing, you need to be buying some gold. And it's at 1,091. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. You know what's different is that yesterday it shot up while the New York Exchange was open. Usually during when the New York Exchange is open, it'll go up all around the world and Asia, and then it hits the U.S. and boom, it'll drop. They'll push it down. Well, all of a sudden it skyrocketed here from 1,050 something to what is it? Like almost 1,090. So I'm going, yep, that's the new level. You know, 1,080. You know, that's going to be the new floor. I guess, you know, if there is such a thing. I don't trust these guys anyway. You just need to get it because you're just going to be thinking, I remember when silver used to be in the double digits. I remember when gold used to be in the four digits, you know, and now is the time. The other thing you need to be doing, and I'll tell you before we get back to Wayne, we had a the new Survival Seed Bank, okay? Now, they're an advertiser on Freedom's Phoenix. They just came on because they advertised about, I don't know, a couple of months ago. We just gave them a test. Yeah, we just want to see what's up. You'll see what happens. Boom, they just now analyzed their data, and they went, holy crap, man, we sold a whole bunch of seeds on Freedom's Phoenix. Yes, they did. Let me tell you why. Because a bunch of us bought it. That's why we had all of our friends and people down here because they have it packaged in these PVC tubes that have all these foil packed of these heirloom seeds that you just get one tube to a whole acre. So I personally know of at least 40 acres that were bought by a bunch of us, and a bunch of other people did too. So you want, you know, you got chickens? I got chickens. I'm in Central Phoenix and I got chickens. You don't got chickens? Slacker? You got a garden? Slacker? Don't be whining to me about, you know, the crash of, you know. And what we tried to do is Dr. Paul was warning, saying, look, this is the third time he's speaking at the Freedom Summit. Yeah, Freedom Summit. FreedomSummit.com. Dr. Paul, Thomas Woods, Charles Goyette, Boston Tea Party, John Taylor Gatto. I mean, you know, on and on and on and on. Butler Schaefer, I mean, you got enough reasons right there. I mean, Adam Kokesh, Sheriff Mack. You know, Joel Skousen, Butler, you know, Gary Franchi from Restore the Republic, Bud Burrell. I mean, it's on and on of the people that are going to say, yes, we have been telling you this was coming. Dr. Paul, this is his third Freedom Summit. He told us what was going to happen. Now it's happened. Now this summit, it's the now what? The end is nigh. Here it is. Now what? Now freaking what? Well, there were people that were behind this message, trying to get this out, working, busting through the system. And we're going to be up against it again in 2010. You think this has gone away? You think this Federal Reserve audit thing is just going to all of a sudden go, oh, they're going to lay back. Yeah, okay, it's all right. We give up. No, 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 no. This is going to keep going. This is going to keep going. Why? Because they know he's right. This is, you know, freedom's the answer. What's the question? Well, if it's the answer, then, you know, why are they opposing it? Because freedom doesn't work for the bad guys. They need monopolistic control. They need regulation. They need favorite status that the government can bestow upon some monopoly. You know, this is what they know. So we have Wayne out there. Wayne is out there going, saying, hey, you know, a little bit of freedom. So, Mr. Terhune, I want you to go ahead and explain to us. You have the motivation behind this. You're working really hard. You're getting to the state convention in Nevada, and it was the righteous forces of versus what? What were you up against?
Well, you know, you can go as far up as you want, but we were up against the New World Order. Absolutely. I don't know if you recall, but McCain, back in December, January, whatnot, was just about out of money and out of his campaign. Then he paid a visit to the Rothschilds over in England and came back with a bundle of money, which is probably illegal right there, and then he was the anointed. And so I say, most likely, you know, it was the strings were being pulled from there. You know, you can't really prove that, but I would say that's who we're fighting against.
You know what's on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix today? We have a clip, my board op Jet, he sent this to me. He's probably afraid to put it up himself. I go, heck yeah, it's Louis Farrakhan stomping all over Rothschild.
Yeah.
When you got Louis Farrakhan going after you, man, you know you got a wide breadth of attack.
There
you know?
Go.
So now you're going up against this. We rule you people.
Right.
And so when you were dealing with the actual Republican Party in Nevada, did they have any understanding of what they were up against? Did they kind of catch them by surprise? Did they know it was a big force and they were just going to squash you into non-existence with their brute force or their shiny badge? Or what was their mindset?
You know what? I believe that they didn't like us, but they were pretty arrogant and they really underestimated us, and it cost them. And they had some buffoons running their campaign. Running things for them, and they really they underestimated us, and we took them by surprise, and we took them down that day. They were pretty arrogant, and you know, it's interesting because you know there was a big deal about the rules thing, and when they got down to nominating, you know, they were deciding during the convention how they were going to nominate and elect delegates to go to the national convention. And the party had presented, they had like 7 slates of 15 people, and you could vote for 2 of those slates, i.e. for 30 delegates, and they'd had, and I think they had something like maybe 4 Ron Paul people on there. And so you couldn't nominate from the floor, you couldn't nominate yourself. They had a nominating committee, and it was interesting that that nominating committee had the head of the McCain campaign for Nevada on it. But in any case, so when it came to the floor, we had a rules change. We had a lot of people, the Ron Paul people. We had our rules. We were organized at a time. We were up all night, pretty much the night before, including with Greenspan and stuff, and going back and forth. And there's a lot of shenanigans going on. And within the next morning of the convention, people were still arguing this, that, and the other. But anyway, the crux of the matter came down is that they wanted to just kind of cram these slates down our throats. Probably if the Ron Paul people were there, they would have accepted it. But we knew Robert's Rules of Order. We had been training on that because Greenspan got us going. So we knew our Robert's Rules of Order. We had some people that really knew what was going on. And we got up and we proposed rules. And these guys were not running it by Robert's Rules of Order. Bob Beers was the chairman. And they were just kind of like, they didn't have a parliamentarian up there to keep them straight. They really didn't run it right at all. They just made many, many mistakes. But anyway,
they can do what they want.
That's what they were doing. That's what they were trying to do. And so we proposed our rules, James, to get rid of those slates and just have nominations from the floor. And so, but you know what's interesting is we had, like, say, a third or so were Ron Paul people who were with us. But then I had a lot of people came up to me, and they were like McCain backers. And they said, hey, Wayne, you know, we're not for Ron Paul, but we want to have this fair. So we're going to vote with you on this rules change so that we can nominate from the floor. And that's where they underestimated, you know, they were so arrogant. And anyway, so we had a big, huge, and then we had a vote. And we got over two-thirds to make this rules change. And so, man, we were cruising then. And so then they came back after lunch and they tried to say, well, let's have slates of four. And so we all voted that down. And then, so they knew they were probably in trouble at this point. Now, in Nevada, we get about 34 delegates or so, and I think 31 are elected. We have three congressional districts, three congressmen, and each CD gets three votes, three delegates. And so they were already had broken up into those congressional districts, and they were voting, and the votes started coming back. And in one district, we got three. In one district, we got, I think, maybe one. And so that was already four out of six for Ron Paul. And we were still doing Congressional District 2, which is the one that I'm in. And that was a large one. There's about 800 votes. And they weren't prepared to do these votes. They weren't prepared to do any of this. I thought they were going to have it just go real quick. And we had our computers and our printers down there and said, hey, we'll make up ballots for you. We'll help you out. And they turned us down. And they realized at that point that we're going to get probably, I would say, 7 out of 9 of the CD votes for Ron Paul. And then when it went to the at-large on the floor, we probably were going to get the rest. And I mean, pretty much everybody acknowledged that. And the kind of the guys, Sue Loudon and crew, and Bob Beers, and there were some other people up there, realized that also.
Now, you got to paint the picture for national. When was in relation to all of the other states, Nevada, how many states were left to vote in their convention for their delegates to national?
We were in April, and, you know, they'd already had the Super Tuesday, I guess. Well, that was the primaries. There was still a lot of states, especially the western states, like Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, maybe even California. I'm not sure. I can't recall, but there were still a lot of states. And if they had allowed this to go, you know, with Ron Paul winning this thing, we could have had at least five states with Ron Paul delegations.
Yeah, see, that's a lot of things. That's something else a lot of people don't understand. These primaries and everything are kind of like straw polls. They're suggestions. Here in Arizona, it's same kind of stuff. You know, it doesn't bind anything. It's just kind of sort of pinky swear. That's, you know, what our delegates will do and the other kind of thing.
Right.
And what was happening in Nevada, it was such an overwhelming support for Dr. Paul that it was, they were not prepared for the landslide, the domino effect that was going to take over the entire country, and they knew it. They had to stop it any way they could, and that's what they were going to do. When we come back here on Declare Your Independence after the top of the hour, we'll still have Wayne Terhune explaining to us the end result, what happened here, and how we got to where we are now. How is it that it's, you know, what, a year and a half later, you know, they're finally deciding they're going to, you know, count these votes? You know, how long was it? It was a long time later. Okay?
Yeah, a year and a half or so.
You know, so and why? And why would they even do it then? Why? Why? We're going to find out. You stay right there when we come back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Wayne. We'll be right back.